we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, read by Peter Donaldson.
September was a chilly month due to a lack of any particularly warm weather.
Thank all of you who sent us that. Let's meet the teams. First, will you welcome, on my right, Richard Ingrams and John Wells. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and the much-travelled Kate Adey. Before we start round one, here's something heard on the weather forecast.
Don't leave animals in cars as they rapidly turn into ovens.
Well, thanks to Mrs. K. Toms of Cornwall for that. Richard, you get the first question, as always, and it's this. Whose Wind of Change resulted in only one lost clause?
It's old Blur, isn't it?
Yep.
Doing his stuff at the conference. He made this speech, which everyone said was so wonderful. Anyway, he hinted that he was going to get rid of the clause four. However, today or yesterday or the day before yesterday, whichever happens to be the case, the Labour Party voted to retain it. So old Blur is back to square one, where people will still think he's brilliant. I hame doots myself.
They didn't seem to think that was very funny, Dickie.
Not meant to be. I'll supply the political satire.
Well, I see.
You can make your funny voices.
Thank you.
He gives us a bit of bottom in the show.
Indeed.
Yes, I've heard.
I don't think we want to go. We had all that last week with the bishop.
Absolutely right, Richard. This is about Tony Blair at the Labour conference where he put across his new policies to oust loony lefties like Peter Lilly and Michael Portillo. His only failure was when conference voted to retain Clause 4, dating from 1918, so yet another leap forward for Labour. John, how nice to have you on the programme again. Your question is this. Where was the game of the names worth over £500 million?
Oh, this is another joke about Lloyds. It's very tragic because they sued the people who'd advised them, and the people who'd advised them have got to pay millions of pounds, and the people who advised them, as it turns out, have reinsured themselves with the people who sued them. So I think they may finish off even worse than they began.
Yes, you're absolutely right, John. These are the so-called Lloyds names who successfully sued the Gooder Walker Syndicate for £504 million losses incurred through their negligence. The term names, by the way, is technical insurance jargon for rich and greedy. One of the names to lose over £1 million was Mr. Norbert Mallet, who's going to use his payout to sue his parents for negligent child naming. The case prompted a rash of claims, including one from a group of punters who are suing Joe Coral for a tenner they lost on the 3:30 at Haydock. Kate, how lovely to have you with us on the programme.
Thank you.
Your question is this. Who took to the streets in protest against a bear with a sore head?
Does this perhaps indicate a small incident at an airport?
Well, yes.
There was a rather awful public moment in Shannon Airport, and there was a gentleman on board, a renowned national airline known to one and all who fly it as Aero Blotto. And this gentleman declined to appear in front of most of Ireland, which was waiting at the bottom of the steps. And he's been roundly condemned for this, the gentleman being Mr. Yeltsin. Clearly everybody wanted him to appear by falling down the steps and just lying there in front of everybody. Yeah.
And then, as a supplementary to that, when he got back to Russia, what happened then?
He said he'd punish everybody. He'd sort of recovered slightly and came out, you know, sort of fighting, as they said.
Yes, absolutely so. These are the Russian hardliners who took to the streets to denounce President Boris Yeltsin, who was in Moscow making a brief visit to the state of sobriety. As the angry crowd of 7,000 began to outnumber the presidential guard, Yeltsin took immediate action and called in refreshments. Reinforcements. However, in a gesture of defiance, President Yeltsin went ahead with a planned birthday party. At one point, he blew on his cake and lit the candles. Alan, Department of No Surprise, here's a piece of music for you.
They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace.
Hoot, for Robin went down with Alice. Now Alice is marrying one of the guard. A soldier's life is terrible hard, says Alice.
Why me?
Well, I
mean, last week I had the new Bishop of Durham, as it were. Did they say Christopher Robin went down with Alice?
Yes, indeed, yes. They did.
Thank God for that. I mean, these days, your ears play strange tricks. I suppose this is about former deputy acting major resigned Hewitt, is it?
Yes.
Well, there's this strange woman who was a relative of Pasternak. Was a name to come to me when I was a boy. I mean, he won the Nobel Prize, and she's written this absolute trash, this sub Barbara Carton thing, which appears to be based on the confessions of a British soldier.
That's right.
Another major, like Ferguson. probably another denizen of the Wigmore Club. Anyway, having broken out of the Wigmore Club in a state of extreme excitation, because nothing untoward goes on there. They just sort of get you ready. Even comes around the corner in a flash, as it were. And I can't. I'm not going to do any more. They know what it's about. You know what it's about. I know what it's about.
Right.
Whether she knew what it was about. Anyway, it's about £3 million.
Well, this. Yeah, I think you squeezed every last drop out of it, to be honest.
Don't say that, Barry.
And I'll tell you what it's got. It's one of those situations where everything you say is going to sound dirty, right? Okay.
With any luck.
With any luck. This is about Captain or Major Hewitt, depending on which page of the Evening Standard you read, who claims to have had a 3-year affair with Princess Diana. His book, Princess in Love, is something of a groundbreaker, being the first work in history to make the writing of Barbara Cartland look like gritty realism. And the scores at the end of the first round are, unsurprisingly, 4-4. We start round two with a bulletin from the Devon and Cornwall National Trust newsletter.
Tuesday the 13th of September. Meet at Hunter's Inn for a 4 to 5 hour walk through woods and meadows and then over the cliffs.
Yes. The Devon and Cornwall Lemming Society. Thank you, Andrew Wilkinson of Plymouth, for sending us that. Richard, your question again. Whose blue pencil saved Howard from having the Michael taken?
This was Inspector Knacker of the Yard.
Yes.
The police seem to spend their time having endless conferences. Have you noticed that? Yeah. That's why there are none of them on the beat, because there are these conferences. They're usually in places like Harrogate. Anyway, at the latest one, Inspector Knacker was about to denounce the Home Secretary for generally cocking things up. And at the last minute, he was prevailed upon to tone down some of his remarks.
Is it suggested that money changed hands, or...?
No money changed hands, Mr. Wills. Oh, but if you'd like to, come and see me off to the broker. Thank you very much.
It's all about the Home Secretary at the Police Superintendents Association, who at the last minute changed the wording of their speech. Oh, well, old habits die hard. The original was considered overcritical of Mr. Howard, and so all derogatory references were deleted. The final version read, good evening, and with that, good night. John, whose morning cereal wasn't swallowed?
Oh, yes. Yes, Mr. Ingram's has prompted me on this.
Oh, good.
It's a very interesting story, this. You know they do women's hour that's always in the afternoon. It's now been moved to the morning,
yes.
Apparently. That's very interesting. And on it, they broadcast this amusing 18th century yarn,
yep.
In which everybody was very interested. But in fact, it turns out to be a pastiche of some kind of diary. The audience don't seem to think anything's very funny. No, it's to do with the women's hour have been peddling this filth. And under the pretense that it's 18th century literature, and it turns out, in fact, to be shoddy stuff cooked up in the 1920s.
By someone called Pasternak, no doubt.
Yeah, and...
You're absolutely right. It refers to Woman's Hour, who are broadcasting the diary of an 18th century lady of fashion that was revealed by listeners to be a hoax. They noticed something was wrong with the entry that read, Tuesday was escorted by Mr. Popplewick in his carriage to dine at Stringfellow's. It was actually written in 1925 by the author Magdalene King Hall. In fact, King Hall was near enough what the producer said when she found out. Kate, bit of music now. Will you listen to this? That was Judge Dredd. And the question is, who must be as sober as a judge at the bar?
Is this yet another injunction, shall we use the word, to get judges to behave like normal people? I read something about consumer awareness for judges. Does this come into this?
I think so, yes.
Consumer awareness, which I'm not quite sure how this is interpreted, that they must perhaps go around in Bentleys, ram-raiding Harrods.
Well, it's a Lord Chancellor's injunction for them to talk less, be sober, be proper, be upright.
One of the things that was quite funny was that they say if the judges are deaf, as most of them are, and they can't hear what people are saying, they should say, I think the jury are having difficulty hearing you.
This is the introduction of a drinking guide for judges. Mr. Justice Tucker's Good Judge Guide includes tips on drinking, courtroom etiquette and dress code. To avoid being ridiculed, judges should stay sober, try to avoid starting a Mexican wave before passing sentence, and always make sure their seams are straight.
I met a judge the other day who told me that as his dresser or butler, you know they have these very expensive butlers, and as he was helping into his red robe before the doors opened and he appeared before the court, this butler actually goosed him. But I thought it was interesting because you think of the whole majesty of the law, and if he goes, whoops, ducky, and he's coming into the courtroom, it would somehow destroy his dignity.
Sort of thing,
you could see it with the wig. Alan, your question now. Where have mobile changes caused a racy movement?
I suppose this is the Derby.
It is.
It is now going to be... I hate things being sponsored by anything. It's always ghastly. The Derby is going to be on a Saturday and sponsored by Vodafone.
What do you expect?
Absolutely ghastly, which means that slightly iffy people who've backed second favourites for a place can probably get through to their jockey and say, just ease up a bit, come in. If you know what's good for you.
This is the news that the Derby is to be moved from Wednesday to Saturday. The riders will still line up on Wednesday. But Epsom have taken on the bloke who used to start the Grand National. Also, the race will be, as you so rightly say, sponsored by Vodafone, so it'll be run over 38 furlongs or 45 at peak times. And the scores at the end of the second round are still tied at 8-all. We start round three with a piece from The Guardian sent in by David Nathan of Brentford.
Until last week, 110 copies of Le Monde were sent to President Mitterrand's palace daily. The order has now been cut to 20, at a loss to the newspaper of £25,000 a year, which, if the reduction was sustained for a year, would cost the newspaper around £25,000 in lost revenue.
Well, thank you, David Nathan, for sending us that. Richard, whose unconsidered trifles are to be dished up by the boxload?
Yeah, we must call a halt to our brilliant run of success.
Yes. Shakespeare. That's the clue. It's also the answer, but I'll give you the clue. Alan knows?
There's a thing called Bard on the Box.
Exactly.
And BBC Two wants to cast... It's just as bad as sponsoring. The quote is, they want to make Shakespeare more accessible to a popular audience. To do this, they've got a number of celebrities, including Jimmy Knapp. It means that people who presently find Shakespeare a bit difficult will now find him bloody incomprehensible.
He would be good as Macbeth, wouldn't he?
He would. Yes. What, Jimmy?
He would be brilliant, yes.
Oh, right, yes.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. The trains will not be running again tomorrow.
15 weeks. Three tomorrows is not enough for a signal.
It's all about BBC Two's Bard on the Box season, with various unlikely people reciting famous bits of Shakespeare. Jimmy Knapp was offered Two Gentlemen of Verona, but said he wouldn't do it for less than eight. Desmond Lynham didn't quite get the hang of it with his Richard II, Henry IV. Bad home result there for the Plantagenets. While James Hewitt went for the Merry Wives of Windsor. And claimed he'd had the complete works. John, here's a piece of music for you. Well, that was the Muppet Show theme, of course. Who will be noted for a green address is the question.
It's to do with Kermit.
Is Kermit the Frog in line to be next Pope? It probably is not to do with that, but I did see a cartoon somewhere of Kermit addressing someone. Is he been... Frog marched
he's
in.
He's been invited to address the Labour Party conference.
Oh, yes.
No, he hasn't. Oh.
Well, apparently, Roy Jenkins, Chancellor of Oxford University, in a mad bid to raise money, is thinking of handing over to Kermit the Frog. Is that it?
No, he's going to speak at the union.
Oh, is he going to speak at the union?
With Jerry Adams.
Well, can he make sense out of this gumball?
Kermit the Frog is going to address the Oxford Union, I believe. Hello, folks. You know, that sort of thing.
I'm thrilled to get Kate Adie to do funny voices on our radio programme. It's a very, very great honour.
Yes, this is all about Kermit the Frog, the thinking woman's Tony Blair. We're even-handed in our abuse. The Frog is to address the Oxford Union. Kermit will follow in the footsteps of President Ronald Reagan. It does seem unfair to group a brainless puppet with Kermit. Due to a tight schedule, Kermit's speech will last just 20 minutes, which is good news for the puppeteer, who is up to his elbow in work. Kate, who was driven to a name change, but only here?
Is this something to do with cars? I think.
Yes, quite right.
Volkswagen wanted to call their VW Tracy, or Sharon, or, you know, Fred, or whatever, and there was a feeling that this might not be quite on, that it should be called Camilla. I don't know.
Yes, the answer is all about Volkswagen's marketing men who've got themselves a new model called Sharon. However, the car won't be called that in Britain because VW think the name Sharon has dumb market connotations. This was the company that made over 20 million cars called a Beetle. Perhaps they should go back to their roots with the VW Earwig. Or the Cockroach GTI. Alan, who has gone back to the Bakelite future?
It's not that man who lives in 1937.
It is indeed the man who lived in 1937.
He's been around for a long time, this bloke. Every time a features page has got a hole in it, this man suddenly appears, drinking Maserati tea, driving his Austin 7 car, riding his Rudge bicycle, wearing a Trilby hat and one of those haircuts done by the man with the Fair Isle pullover. And he lives in it, but it's not a news item. He's got this house dedicated to living in 1937. It's rather like John Major. but more successful. And this is what this bloke does. He's just an extremely interesting man living in a 1937 house. He's got a daughter who lives in the basement who doesn't like 1937.
What's she in, 1952?
It's all about the man called Alec Williams, who insists on living in 1937. His house, car, and all his possessions date from the 30s. Mr. Williams spends his spare time glued to his Bakelite radio, listening to up-and-coming comedians like Will Hay and Sandy Powell. And the scores at the end of round three are... Well, they've changed quite considerably, because Richard and John have scored 9, but Alan and Kate have leapt into the lead with 14. Richard, will you have a listen to this?
He's potato feet. Now he's going down the street. He's got orders to repeat, because he's got the best potatoes, has potato feet. Potatoes, hot potatoes, big or small, short or tall, potato feet, he's got them all.
Well, that was Potato Pete by the Harry Roy Band, 1937, if ever I heard it. Who was on a sticky wicket with his irreverent delivery? That's the question.
I think this is this week's funny vicar story, isn't it?
It is.
It concerns the Reverend Yeltsin, who was invited to address his local cricket dinner. Mm-hmm. And in the manner of his distinguished namesake, he'd had a few, and he said, it's time to open the bowling, and began to hurl roasted potatoes at his fellow diners, I think.
That's it.
Yeltsin seems a funny name.
He said that he thought he'd seen someone picking their nose, didn't he? Story and
so there's a lot of it about.
And he had this long speech about behaviour critical, and they started chucking the food at him. Very strange, chap.
Puts you off going to church if you think the vicar's going to reach down into the pulpit and start hurling potatoes at you every time you pick your nose.
This is all about the Reverend Richard Allen, who went to a Minehead cricket club dinner and got legless before wicket. His after-dinner speech was riddled with obscenities before he called for the singing of hymn number 4 and 20 virgins came down from Inverness. John, whose ads were considered something unsuitable for the weekend? Or at any time.
Oh, really? But is that something to do with contraceptives, isn't it?
It is.
That? Yes.
It's usually Corin gets the condom question.
I've had it. It was the first one.
No, it's apparently, according to my the psychic reception on my right, Mrs. Doris Stokes has just told me that it is British Rail. And apparently, are they, offering inflatable contraceptives?
Well, it would make a nice change.
Yes, it would. You get there quicker on an inflatable contraceptive.
Yes, I suppose.
Just let the wind out and off you go.
There'll be another one along in a minute.
Another excuse for the condoms on the line, isn't it?
But their ads, have they been making sexy and suggestive ads?
They're making blasphemous references to the European flag for some reason.
What, in sort of condom with a star?
Yeah,
printed all around
like
it.
Yes. Oh, yes. I can't remember what they were advertising.
If you get really excited, you can produce 28 stars, apparently.
This is British Rail's advertising people who were criticised for their unseemly use of condoms. Mind you, they were on the 315 from Charing Cross at the time. It was all part of British Rail's campaign to promote a new Have It Away Day ticket. Hey, who ended up completely wrecked after a shopping spree?
Could it concern Nottinghamshire? These things go on in Nottinghamshire, I am led to believe. In one of those places which inspires people to wild and fierce and passionate behaviour, known as Sainsbury's.
You are absolutely correct.
There was a story about somebody who exited from Sainsbury's and somewhat overtaken by whatever it is that overtakes people when they get inside their car, particularly if it's a VW Charon, went around the car park and managed to get a lot of other vehicles between his headlamps and crunched them.
That's right. That's the story. Well done. This is motorist Wilford Howarth, who got his foot jammed on the accelerator and managed to destroy 13 cars in Sainsbury's car park. The trouble was that he was only in the 9 prangs or less lane. Mr. Howarth was later charged with impersonating a shopping trolley. Alan, how was Dai Quan brought to book?
The first erotic novel to be produced in the Welsh language. It's going to be published next month. Hewitt. Geoffrey Miller. it's all a trick to get the Welsh to learn Welsh. They're not going to sit there going to their ice desks and things and reading Bibles. It's a great plan by the Welsh Language Society to get them to speak everything. So they're giving them these dirty books.
Oh.
It's got a very curious, very unerotic title. I mean, even in English. It's called something like a confidential assignment or something. I can't exactly.
It's even duller than that.
Tell me.
It's actually called A Comfortable Arrogance.
That could well
Which
be
means absolutely nothing, I would think. But perhaps in Welsh it means something tremendously exciting.
Yes, you think they mistranslated the whole thing. When the English read it, it won't be erotic at all. Perhaps it's only erotic in Wales. Perhaps it's about sheep and gumboots.
This is the world's first erotic Welsh novel, entitled A Comfortable Arrogance, written by Jones the Raincoat. The 270-page work details the erotic adventures of a Welsh lawyer on the day he went to Bangor. Yes, you get more than just a welcome on his hillside. We appear to have come to the end, but before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
I think it's from The Telegraph.
Oh, good.
No, it's another crime story. It says, David Johnston, a car thief who had fled Kirkham Open Jail, began talking to the motorist who picked him up near the M6. "I hope you don't mind," he said, "but I'm an escaped prisoner." The driver, Mr. Steve Winder, replied, "Not if you don't mind that I am a prison officer."
John.
Well, this was sent, a cutting sent to me by Peter Miles, and it's an advertisement for book bargains in The Independent. And this one is called How to Satisfy a Woman Every Time. Over 1.3 million copies sold in America alone. We've imported just a few copies, which are reserved for this sale on a first-come, first-served basis.
A nice literary touch to that, I hope. Kate, have you got a cutting for us?
The Totnes Times has a little cinematic item. A new film is to be produced in Devon as a result of a competition. The recipient of the 1994 Kodak Award for Short Films is to be shot in mid-October in the woods.
Alan?
I have a bit of Tory policy from the Western Mail, Barry.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Mr. Ralph Davis, secretary of the local branch of the Farmers' Union, said, there is a desperate need for this new slaughterhouse. It would ease the unemployment situation at a stroke.
Well, thank you all. Now, let's look at the final scores, which are unsurprising, really, because Richard and John have scored a noble 13, but Alan and Kate have scored an even more noble 18 and are this week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Darley Abbey Community News, sent in by Mr. K. Keithley of Derby.
We apologise for the error in the last edition, in which we stated that Mr. Fred Nicomb was a defective in the police force. This was a typographical error. We meant, of course, that Mr. Nicomb